Good evening, everybody. This is Commander Tom Garcia filling in for Michael Cutler. It is the Michael Cutler Hour. Now, you may be asking yourselves, where is Michael Cutler tonight on this nice Friday night? Well, I have an answer for you. Michael was asked to attend a public screening, and of all places, the Hamptons. Sounds pretty posh, but anyway, in the Hamptons of a new documentary coming out called They Come to America. And it's a documentary to expose the impact of illegal immigration on this very country. So he's doing that tonight and asked me to fill in for him. So I gladly said, of course, yes, for the Michael Cutler Show. By the way, I have my own show, and I usually broadcast on Wednesday nights on the same network. You can find it on the same webpage, usatalkradio.com, or better yet, just go to tomgarcia.com, tomgarcia.com. Of course, I got a Facebook page, which is entitled The American Hour Radio Show, and that's the name of my show, The American Hour. And you can follow us on Twitter at The American Hour. So let's get into the show now. So let's just take a quick little look at this documentary that Michael is previewing tonight. It's a documentary by Dennis Michael Lynch. And in his film, They Come to America, is something that really I think every American ought to see. He covers it all from every perspective: the illegal job market, American workers, illegal alien criminals, ranchers on the border, law enforcement, and activists on both sides. There really isn't much that he misses, and he does it in a balanced, everyman way that will leave no American unaffected by the experience. So if you get a chance to find this movie, wherever it's going to come out, who knows? These are the kind of movies that get blacklisted and don't show up in too many places. But 2016 ended up exploding and going viral in the movie theaters. So who knows? But if you go to the website standwitharizona.com, standwitharizona.com, you'll find out information about this movie, and there's probably a trailer and some other – I do see some clips and some other information. So that's a place to check it out. Now, Michael Cutler, as you all know, is a retired 30-year INS officer, Immigration and Naturalization Service, and he was a special agent with that organization. So he has some really keen insight into not only the immigration issue, but – border security, national security, international security. And there has been a lot of stuff going on. So you've been watching the news and you've seen some of those things. I've got a couple of clips to play tonight. The first one's about Fast and Furious. You ought to be furious over this. People died. Now, we've got one border agent that died. But there are hundreds of Mexicans that died because we ran guns into Mexico without any way of tracking them. And there's still thousands of them there in Mexico in the hands of drug lords and criminals, and they will continue to kill more innocent people. And this is all under the direction of our wonderful administration today. Now, of course, some people will say, oh, we don't have any proof of that. They've done so much stonewalling, it's clear they're trying to hide what they've done. And the inspector general, let's see, when was he questioned here? Just I think yesterday, about the White House and their help in trying to pursue leads in the Fast and Furious probe so they can figure out, you know, who really to blame on this, because there should be some blame laid on this. And the IG said that the White House made it impossible to pursue certain leads. And I've got one of those. You're going to hear, you know, some questions being asked and him responding. But this gives you an idea. It's under a minute long, so it's not too long. But let's take a look at what the IG had to say.
All right. You noted also in your report that the White House refused to share internal communications with you during your investigation of Fast and Furious. We've noted a connection into the White House through Kevin O'Reilly at the National Security Council. Do you think the White House's refusal to share these documents limited the scope of your investigation? And would this committee be well served by pursuing an investigation in that avenue?
Well, as we noted in the report, and as you know, Congressman, we did not get internal communications from the White House, and Mr. O'Reilly's unwillingness to speak to us made it impossible for us to pursue that angle of the case and the question that had been raised.
So it would probably be worthwhile for us to pursue.
Well, certainly we have sought to pursue every lead we could. So I can just tell you, from our standpoint, it was a lead we wanted to follow.
Now, I know there are people going to say, oh, other administrations have stonewalled on things. Not in a situation where people died, hundreds of people died. You know, there are folks that want to always bring up the Valerie Plame issue. First of all, she was an undercover CIA agent. Second of all, when it all finally came down to it, was really from the State Department. You know, it was under Colin Powell's direction, and he knew about it all along, that it was, and a guy's name escapes me, but the guy that actually ended up leaking it. And that all came out in the end, but Scooter Libby, because he had been chief of staff for George Bush, they really went after him because they just wanted to hammer somebody in the Bush administration. Now, but did anybody die? No, nobody died. And was there any information, other information leaked out? I'm not saying it was the right thing to do. I'm not saying it's not that big of a deal. It certainly was, but were any other names compromised of field operatives that could have put their lives at risk? Absolutely not. And yet we have a list of hundreds of Mexicans who have been killed and one valiant Border Patrol agent. So this is beyond the scope of Valerie Plame and those kind of issues. Yes, there's been stonewalling. And here comes the next little excuse for those that want to carry water for this administration: executive privilege. The problem is they're invoking, the president's invoking executive privilege for communications that he wasn't even involved in. That is beyond the scope of executive privilege. The Supreme Court has made that clear in the past, that not only is it limited to correspondence with the president, from the president to the president, but limited in the scope of that kind of communications, every single type of communication, but it would be something that would be a security, cause a security risk, national security issue. And the administration hasn't explained how they justify using executive privilege for people in the administration and discussions that didn't even involve the president. So this is something to be furious about, honestly. And it's a security issue when we have a collusion between the Department of Justice and leadership within our Border Patrol and INS to run guns, really for the purpose of creating a backlash against gun ownership. That's what it was done for. Look how many people lost their lives in an attempt to try and justify reducing gun ownership. It's disgraceful. It's absolutely disgraceful. Well, the next thing I've got is Jake Tapper kind of grilling Jay Carney, Jay the Roadie Carney, about who decided that Marines weren't needed in Libya to protect the consulate and the folks in the consulate, whether they're traveling or in the actual embassy. So listen to Jay do a really nice tap dance. I think he must be a, you know, entertainer on the side, because he really taps around it and doesn't even come close to answering the question. You'll hear it, and then we'll discuss it. Okay, here's Jay Carney doing his tap dance. It's about 2.5 minutes long.
In the wake of the attacks in Benghazi, the Pentagon and the State Department both made statements that they then had to correct the Pentagon involving whether or not there were Marines at the embassy in Tripoli. There were not, and the State Department regarding the presence of security firms at the Benghazi compound. Why was there such confusion, and is the White House or anyone conducting any sort of internal investigation as to what went wrong?
Well, there is an ongoing investigation into what happened in Benghazi. That's,
yeah, there's always an ongoing investigation, even when there's not.
I'm talking about the, obviously, there wasn't adequate security. That along the lines of what went wrong, what the administration could have done better.
Right. I think I would refer you for questions about security at the Benghazi diplomatic facility, and broadly speaking, at diplomatic facilities, consulates, embassies around the world, to the State Department. In terms of statements that were corrected by defense or state, I would refer you to those departments. You know, from our perspective, we got out to you the information that we had as soon as we had it, and it was available, and our assessment of what happened has been based on the best available information that we've had. There is an ongoing investigation led by the FBI now, going back to specifically what happened in Benghazi, and we await the results of that investigation for more information about the protests and the attacks and what precipitated them and who participated in them, with the primary objective here of fulfilling the president's commitment that the that those people responsible for the deaths of four Americans be brought to justice.
What reason could there be, or let me rephrase that, who made the decision that there should not be Marines in at our diplomatic posts in Libya? More than half of our diplomatic posts have Marines. I understand they're not there to protect people, they're there to protect classified data, but it doesn't hurt to have them there. Who made the decision?
Well, I think security at diplomatic facilities is overseen by and run by the State Department, so I'd refer you to them about how decisions are made and what the allocation of resources was in Benghazi and elsewhere.
Wow. Did he just throw Hillary Clinton under the bus? Now, it's true the State Department is in charge of that security. The president can't micromanage every aspect of running the executive branch, but the State Department works for the president. When this occurred, wouldn't it make sense that the president would say, I want to know why there weren't Marines there? So they would already have an answer. And yet they don't have an answer. They're just sloughing it off. And there's a reason for that. They may have an answer, but they want people to discover the State Department under Hillary Clinton has failed so that he can throw her under the bus and say, oh, it's not my fault. Remember, Ben Franklin said that those that are really good at making excuses aren't good for much else. And we got a president who is really, really good at making excuses. In fact, I think he set a record. More excuses made than jobs created while he's been president. But I digress here. You know, a couple interesting things there from what Jay had to say. First of all, FBI investigation. Oh, so it's a criminal investigation. I'm not buying that. This is an act of war. It might be terror, an act of war, just like Al-Qaeda when they attacked on 9/11. Our city of New York and Washington, D.C., that was an act of war. Did we just say, okay, FBI, why don't you guys say, yeah, of course the FBI was in on that. But there were a lot more other agencies that were in on that, including the military that dropped a lot of bombs. I'm not suggesting that we're going anywhere to drop bombs. What I'm saying is this sounds like not a commitment to find those perpetrators. And that was the second thing I was going to get into. There's a commitment from the president to find the perpetrators. It would have been nice if the president would have committed to protecting our people in these very volatile, unstable countries. My question is, why do we even have an embassy and consulate personnel in Libya and even Egypt right now? I understand that Egypt has been a longtime ally, but that nation is very unstable. And we have relied in stable countries, on the local police and local and the military of those countries to protect our consulate, in addition to the Marines that may be stationed there. But in this case, they're highly unstable countries, and we've seen that this anti-American sentiment is very strong there. So relying on local police in unstable countries to protect our diplomats is obviously stupid. Now, you can say, oh, well, you got hindsight, Tom. Look, if somebody had asked me 6 months ago, you know, should we have diplomats in Egypt and or Libya, I would have said absolutely not. If we have to, it's going to be an absolute mess. They're going to be escorted by Marines who are prepared, because what have we seen for the last year, year and a half in Afghanistan and Iraq? We've seen American-trained soldiers turning on Americans on a dime and shooting them and killing them on the spot. Service members, those armies who have taken their oaths of office and violating them and killing American soldiers. Those are supposedly stable nations now, compared to Egypt and Libya. So I think pathetic. I think this is an absolute sign of weak leadership. And it's a very, very serious national security issue. But one thing it really points to is the naiveness and appeasement of this administration, that if we just play nice, the Arabs and jihadists and Muslims out there will all just be really nice to us. Well, they haven't been really nice. They've been attacking our embassies left and right. Now, I saw something the other day that said that George Bush administration, while George Bush was president, we had more embassies attacked and protested against than any other president in history. Well, first of all, he was president for 8 years. But second of all, how many were breached? Zero. How many were attacked on one given day? Not 21, like we had a week or so ago. 21 in one day. Okay, so there's a extreme failure of leadership. If this administration wants to throw Hillary on the bus for that, well, there you go. You can go for it, but just aware that the buck really stops the president because he's the head of the executive branch, which the State Department works for. Now, kind of going back to the topic of illegal immigration and reminding you that Michael Cutler is previewing a movie tonight called They Come to America. And it's a documentary designed to expose the impact of illegal immigration on all facets of our life here, and there are lots of impacts. And Michael talks about this at great length, and he is one of the most eloquent speakers and most well-versed and knowledgeable anywhere in the country, and that's why he's constantly going and speaking at these various venues and being asked on to do exactly what he's doing tonight, so that he can be one of the first to see this and promote it and talk about it and critique it, etc. I'm going to talk about, though, one aspect of illegal immigration and how it harms Americans because of a personal aspect. Now, I'm going to throw this out here because you may or may not have paid attention to my introduction, but I am Tom Garcia, and yes, I am an American Hispanic heritage. I wrote an article some time ago that American Thinker was said they were going to print, but then they didn't. So I took it to a good friend of mine who runs the website, duhprogressive.com. It's D-U-H, progressive.com. It's a satirical website, and I laugh and laugh every time I look at that. He's got a unique, Nick Taxi is his name, he's got a really unique sense of humor, but he also does serious op-eds. And up to now, he's been writing those. I asked him if he'd take one of mine, and he said yes. So it's been on there for maybe close to a month now. If you go to duhprogressive.com and for real op-eds or real commentary, I think it's over on the left side, somewhere on the left side of the webpage, you'll find some of his past commentary, and he's done a couple since he posted mine, but mine is called A Tale of Two Garcias. So I'm going to go over this with you because it shows you from a very personal standpoint, my standpoint, of how illegal immigration harms and hurts the futures, the current, right now, of our high school and college kids and futures of our high school and college kids. Now, this is the tale of one legal and one illegal family of Hispanic heritage in the U.S. and how the president's recent changes to deportation harm U.S. citizens. Now, nothing about the DREAM Act or what the president recently told, he didn't even issue an executive order, but told the Department of Homeland Security and Immigration Naturalization, et cetera, to how to handle illegal immigrants has anything to do with children. It's all about adults because you have to have graduated from high school, you have to have served in the military, and now that's a whole other story. Illegal immigrants serving in the military, it happens. What a breach of national security that is. I mean, just think about it. If you want to get into our military and cause some destruction from within, you learn to speak Spanish, walk across the border, and if you don't already, and become a dreamer and sign up for the military because that's what we want our dreamers to do. Anyway, again, I digress. That's going off, but you can see where that, how that can be a serious, serious issue. Well, remember when Governor Perry apologized for calling Americans heartless for opposing in-state tuition fees for the children of illegal immigrants? He didn't change his position, though, because he believes it's the right thing to do. And I'm sure there are a lot of illegal immigrants residing in his state that would agree. But what about the legal residents who are competing for a finite number of admission slots to college? And what about the legal citizens of other states that would like to come to Texas if only they could pay the in-state tuition costs? It would seem that the government of compassion extends first to citizens of other countries before those of his own. Now we have a president whose compassion extends first to citizens of other countries before those of his own. He's violated the Constitution, his oath of office, and federal law to take Governor Perry's efforts a step further. It's not enough to help adults in-state tuition. But now we, the taxpayer, must shoulder the burden of helping millions of adults from other countries gain employment and or qualify for food stamps, unemployment, welfare. And that's right, I said adults. The only people that qualify under the president's amnesty plan are adults. Yes, they were children once. They were brought here by their parents when they were children. But they're adults today. The economic impact of this move is far-reaching. It will create lost jobs by U.S. citizens and massive increases in entitlement costs. So let's focus on just one aspect, as I said before, the college tuition aspect of it. I'm going to compare the differences of two similar families struggling to afford college tuition. The first family comes, and as a little kind of my family, the first family comes from a long line of Garcias originating in Mexico City four generations ago. The first Garcias moved into Texas before it was a U.S. territory and gained citizenship legally as it became part of the United States of America. The father of the modern-day family served in the United States Navy for 22 years and has a daughter who has finished community college. In-state tuition costs are much higher than community college, and it's going to be difficult, and it is difficult to afford without some form of tuition assistance, lucky if you can get a scholarship, et cetera. But the competition for assistance and admission is compounded by the addition of the thousands of students of foreigners illegally residing in the state. So people say, but Tom, isn't it unfair? Isn't it mean? Isn't it inhumane to deny these wonderful kids? Well, I'm going to get to that in a minute. First of all, at the expense of my children, that's what's inhumane. The second family comes from a long line of Garcias originating in Mexico and is the first to live in the U.S. They're a hardworking family who came to Texas on a work visa, which expired 10 years ago. The father works in the restaurant industry and has a daughter who has done well in high school and is applying to several universities in Texas. And the in-state tuition rate, with some tuition assistance via loans, she may just be able to afford one of the universities she's applied to, especially since both of her parents work and work hard and just save all the money that they can and live a meager existence because they want to get her into a college and pay for it. At the out-of-state tuition rates, oh no, she wouldn't be able to afford that. And that's Governor Perry's argument for allowing her to pay the in-state tuition rate in Texas. But wait, President Obama has just forced this controversial state decision on each and every state in the nation. So unlike Texas, which made the decision on its own, the rest of the union now has no choice. Ironically, if she were to return to Mexico with her U.S. high school diploma and good grades, she would be virtually assured of getting in to one of the public universities and by the way, very good university in Mexico City and branches throughout the country that are world-renowned and quite good. In any case, she would be able to get into one of these universities at a tuition rate of, are you ready? $0 per semester. That's right, free. But hey, where's the compassion in letting her return to her country of citizenship for a free education? That's not compassionate. An education at a very highly world-respected university, no less. No, that's not compassionate. That's just being plain mean. So now my daughter has to pay the price for this compassion. Of course, my daughter can't go to the University of Mexico because she's not a Mexican citizen. For some reason, the president thinks that it's right for taxpayers to subsidize the education of a person that could return to their country of citizenship for a free education subsidized by their own countrymen, all while U.S. citizens compete against a growing population of non-citizens for admissions and assistance. And that's what the president calls doing the right thing. The truth is, for the first Garcia family, it's called creating additional hardship. For some families, it might be creating significant hardship. For the second Garcia family, it's called expensive but convenient, and we're going to talk about why it's so convenient, actually, and why it's so important. So why does the second Garcia family not want to save all that money by sending their daughter back to Mexico to live with relatives or friends and get a free education? Because our way of life is so much better than most every other nation in the world. Our unique constitution guarantees the kind of liberty and freedom that they came searching for to begin with. Therefore, it's supremely important for the second Garcia family to get a legal toehold in the U.S. so they can begin the process of chain migration. If you've listened to Michael Cutler before, you've heard the term chain migration. Well, what is that? I'm going to take a little sidetrack here. Chain migration, it's based on the fact that in order to bring relatives, family members, into this country who are not obviously citizens, and maybe you are a citizen, even if you want to marry somebody that's a citizen of another country, and you're a citizen of this country, you must prove that you can financially support them. Aha! Now we're getting somewhere. So, let's see if I can find where I was again. So the second Garcia family needs, make sure I didn't miss anything. Oh, but bringing parents to this country legally, as I just said, require proving the ability to financially support them. So the second Garcia family needs a member legally in the U.S. with strong finances. Now, this daughter technically isn't legal, but if she can kind of keep on going with this whole dreamer concept, she will be legal. And guess what? And then she can bring her family, which are already here, but we're not going to pay attention to that because that would be mean. So although a degree from the University of Mexico would secure that here in the U.S., this graduate, this high school graduate then going to University of Mexico and come back, would have to come back into the country and apply for legal immigration return. It's a risky prospect for a family that's already here illegally. It's better for her to just stay here, pay the money, blend in like you're illegal, to like you are legally here to begin with. In the end, the second Garcia family has gained the benefits of citizenship without earning that citizenship. When something precious is not earned, and we all know this if you've had kids, but taken, it doesn't tend to be valued. We see the result of this in the Reagan amnesty in California. We've seen second-generation citizens of that amnesty program parading around in California, particularly Southern California, with Mexican flags and demanding open borders. U.S. citizens acting as though they're ashamed to be Americans and more proud of their Mexican heritage. We're going to see a lot more of this across the country if we keep catering to people who are poaching citizenship. So I have a serious question for the Garcia family that has gained the benefits of citizenship without earning citizenship. Actually, the question I have is for all Americans in this country, especially Americans of Hispanic heritage. Are you willing to put your personal bias on this subject ahead of the best interest of the nation? Are you willing to put your personal bias ahead of the Constitution? You're here most likely because you or a predecessor left a socialistic quasi-dictatorship for a country that follows the rule of law found in our Constitution. But is this issue significant enough that it's worth allowing the president to violate the Constitution and the rule of law? Is that what you were searching for, another socialist quasi-dictatorship? The problem here is you may not find the next president and the next violation of the Constitution quite so agreeable. It might not work for you, but what are you going to see then? Oh, it violates the Constitution. Well, you're all for violating the Constitution before, and I know so there are going to be people saying, well, what are you talking about, violating the Constitution, Tom? The president has no authority to make law. Read the Constitution. He only has the authority to ensure that the law is faithfully executed, and there's nothing in the law that says that wholesale law enforcement in this country will ignore illegal immigrants in a broad age range. There's nothing. It's a violation of the Constitution and his oath of office. It's a violation of the separation of powers. So what's the solution? Well, first, Mr. President, give taxpayers, job seekers, and college applicants a break by stopping the addition of millions of new residents from other countries who were here originally illegally. This is a wealth transfer from middle-class taxpayers to the citizens of other nations amounting to tens of millions of dollars. Why should American citizens, students, and young job seekers be forced to compete with adults who shouldn't be here to begin with and have a free education waiting for them in their home country? Second, please tell us what additional types of compassion you're going to cost us if you are reelected. And finally, stop violating the Constitution. So that was the article. I hope you enjoyed it. It points out just one aspect of how illegal immigration impacts citizens of this country. And that's going to be it for tonight. It was a short and sweet evening, only about half an hour. I didn't have a lot that I wanted to say. tonight. I know Michael usually goes for at least a full hour, but he'll be back next week, absolutely, on Friday, 7 p.m. You don't want to miss Michael. He not only is great with his presentation on any issue, any subject, but he loves to have people call in and discuss this with you, and I guarantee you he can discuss issues with the best of them, the absolute best of them. So, next week, Friday, and of course, I am Tom Garcia, and if you want to check out my show, it's usually on Wednesday nights at 7 p.m. I might actually not be able to do it this week. We'll see. I'll get a guest host in, but Wednesday, 7 p.m., and if you go to usaradionetwork.com and look for my page, or just type in tomgarcia.com, you'll get there, and you can check out my show. Nick Taxia did a show for me this last week while I was out of the country, and it sounds like he had a really good time, first show that he's broadcast by himself. And, of course, if you go to the website, you can always download past shows at no cost, absolutely free. And on iTunes, if you do a search for, I believe, I always forget, I apologize, I think it's USA Talk Radio Network, something like that. Anyways, you do a search in iTunes, and you can stream or download there as well. So check all that out, all of Michael's past shows and my past shows and with special guests and guest hosts and that kind of thing. So thanks for joining us tonight. Appreciate it. Next week, we will see you here with the Michael Cutler Show, and Michael will be back next Friday at 7 p.m.